Chapter 8. Caldera. The Askir Rift.
They need more time.
He was bleeding. His ship was bleeding. Rodolf started to laugh. Pain ripped through his torso and he stopped. At least his vision cleared again. Groth was in vox contact with Waylon Kale.
Yes, Admiral, she said. The shipmaster has heard from Chapter Master Corland. They've made contact with the Primarch.
While she spoke, she kept her eyes on the Tacticarium screens and the Oculus. Another Mechanicus ship exploded, taking an Orc attack ship with it, but leaving a gap in the Finality's flanking escort.
Full fire starboard, Groth ordered.
Rodolf reached for the vox unit.
Shipmaster Kale, he said. Why is the strike force not extracting?
The campaign is not finished, Kale answered. The Primarch is leading an assault to take Caldera back from the Orcs.
Impossible, Rodolf thought. He stopped himself before speaking. He realized he was confronting two different impossibilities in Kale's words. Purging the world of this Orc army was one. Before long, the Greenskins would destroy what was left of the Imperial fleet. Then there would be nothing to prevent overwhelming reinforcements from reaching planetside. The second impossibility was the presence of Vulcan. He has been found. Rodolf had believed in the necessity of the mission. He had not believed in its success. Vulcan has been found. The impossible was true. His duty, therefore, was simple. He looked at Groth, who was waiting for him to perform that duty. He had no doubt she would have him declared unfit if he did not. She would be right to do so.
Tell Chapter Master Corland we fight until victory, Rodolf told Kale. Gladly. The Emperor guide your hand, Admiral.
Rodolf straightened. His heart skipped and hammered, strained by the stims, yet he felt stronger. He swallowed his blood, tasting iron, tasting determination. An Orc ramship punched through the corvette sainted blade. The blade's midsection disintegrated, her remains exploding just as the greenskin vessel was leaving the corpse behind. The blast was too much for the ramship's weaker rear shielding. Explosions worked their way forwards along its hull. The Orc ship maintained its course for the Finality superstructure even as it began to come apart. It streaked over the battleship's stern and travelled over the hull, slowing but inexorable.
Raise the bow!
Rodolf shouted. There was no evasion possible. He had his choice of disasters. He sought the lesser one. The Finality lifted. Rodolf watched the Oculus. The movement was imperceptible at first. The ramship ate up the distance to the superstructure. Too slow, the Admiral thought. He braced for the fire and the end. Visible movement. Graceful. Massive. So gradual. The ramship's flight was low, very low. The spires of the hull made contact with the belly of the Orc vessel. That was enough. Its nose dropped, barely more than a fireball of travelling metal. It came down onto the Finality's hull, striking a few hundred metres from the base of the superstructure. Rodolf held the command pulpit and leaned against it just before impact. He remained standing as the hammer blow resounded through the battleship. The depth of the tremors told him how deep the wound was. The Oculus showed everything forward of the superstructure disappear in the expanding firestorm. Across the bridge, the dull voices of servitors overlapped as they called out damage reports. Groth, face grim, tapped at the Tacticarium screens until a clear summary emerged. Rodolf watched the casualty figures hit the tens of thousands and keep climbing. Power was down across two-thirds of the ship. The void shields collapsed. For close to half a minute, they remained down, and Orc cannon shells opened more gaps in the armor. When they returned, the shields were at less than 40% of their strength. A rent half a kilometer wide had been torn in the hull. Atmosphere poured into the void. Bulkheads could not seal. Amidships, the top 10 decks vented completely. Still, the casualty numbers climbed. Vacuum killed some fires, others kept spreading, finding more air to burn. Rank upon rank of weapon batteries went dead.
Steering?
Rodolf asked.
We still have it, said Groth. Barely.
And he was still standing, breathing and thinking, still commanding. Barely. That would suffice too.
"Maintain course for the Greenskin's moon," Rodolph said.
He took a rattling breath. He vowed he would remain conscious until his vessel's dissolution.
"Keep them worried."
Lacolith groaned with war. It burned. It cried out to wrathful night. The Fist's exemplar split up, racing along the sides of the avenue towards the walkers. The Mechanicus guns angled their beams towards the monster's heads. Along the rooftops of the buildings that still stood, and on the crests of rubble mounds, the Skitarii gathered and attacked the orc infantry. The walkers fired to the left and right, bringing down more structures. The power of the orc machines was overwhelming, yet there could be no retreat from them. There was only attack. "We fight for time," Thane told himself, conscious of how little remained to him. "Each second is a victory." Then the walkers stopped firing. They took a step back. Thane blinked. It was as if the Leviathans were retreating before the Fist's exemplar.
"Chapter Master,"
Aloysian said. "I know, brother." The walkers turned around. Footstep by thunderous footstep, they headed back down the Grand Avenue. Beyond them came the snarl of vehicle engines pushed to the limit. The infantry was on the run. The orcs were leaving Lacolith faster than they'd arrived.
"How can this be a retreat?"
said Aloysian. "It isn't," Thane understood. "They're racing to stop the last wall." The Honor Spear and Triumph of Himalaya flew between the Askia Rift's guardian volcanoes. Lava flowed sullenly down the slopes of the peaks. Their eruptions were a slow, constant release of pressure, preventing greater cataclysm. Beyond them, the rift opened up. It was a canyon thousands of meters deep and less than 2,000 across at its widest point. The Askia Valley floor was bright with the light of Xenos industry. Corland stood with Vulcan at the open side door of a Thunderhawk. His eyes widened as the gunships dropped lower and the details of the construction became clearer.
"Have they done this only since the assault began?"
Vulcan nodded.
"I would have known otherwise. They must have used more troops here than in the invasion itself. Did they know you were here?"
The idea the orcs knew more about the location of the Primarch than did the Adeptus Astartes was appalling. He forced himself to ask it. He must not consider anything beyond the reach of this enemy.
"Not before they arrived, I think. I was aware of something happening in this region first, then the attack on Lacolith began. The invasion was a distraction, an effort to keep me from here at the least. A successful one, until now."
Corran felt the scale of the conflict and the tactics on Caldera sink in further. Millions of orcs deployed to counter a single warrior, and the orcs had known to do this.
"Still lower," he voxed Preko. "Get their attention."
The orc facility occupied the full width of the rift. It ran for dozens of kilometers north and south. Conduits, each 10 meters thick, plunged into the bedrock and ran into power junctions the size of manufactoria. Chimneys rose half the height of the canyon. They spewed smoke and ash. Their mouths glowed red. Corran stared. He pointed.
"Are those chimneys doing what I think they are?"
"Yes," Vulcan replied. "They are dagger wounds in the flesh of Caldera."
His anger smouldered like the magmatic light from the chimneys.
"The orcs have pierced the crust. They are using the energy of this world to power its own destruction."
Even more immense conduits ran from the junctions towards a towering central point in the distance. The Grand Nexus was twice again as big as the other structures. To Corlin's eyes, it was simultaneously manufactorium and a single machine. Its conical form suggested the orc versions of the Titans, but many orders of magnitude larger. It had extrusions resembling arms, but instead of cannons, the articulations released energy one moment and in the next fed the searing light back inside its metal walls. Pulsing arteries of incandescent blue and green and white ran from the nexus and up the rift walls. Corland followed them with his eyes. Lining the top of the canyon, at the end of each line of power, were flaring, arcing points. After some flashes, he could just make out the shape of huge energy coils. Everywhere he looked, he saw the generation and deployment of inconceivable force. The engineering violated any principles he knew, yet it worked.
"What is this?" he finally asked. "The means of murder," Vulcan said. "Power is created and controlled here. It flows north."
Corland understood.
"This is part of their gravity weapon."
It was how the orcs were taking Caldera apart and sending its pieces up to become part of the attack moon. The technology required a planet-side base as well as the device used on the orbital base. The orcs were not simply lashing the planet with their gravitic whips. They were controlling the ascent of the masses.
"You will doubtless see more evidence of the crime further to the north," said Vulcan.
The passage of the two Thunderhawks was rapid, and it took several seconds for the orcs to react. Turrets sprang to life across the installation. Vehicles and troops mobilized into the spaces between structures and conduits. Preko dared the fire and took the honor spear even lower, flying between chimneys. The anti-air fire was cautious by orc standards. They were taking care not to destroy their great machine. It was moments later, with the Nexus looming closer, that Corland learned just how fast the orcs were reacting to the incursion. Thane contacted him on the command network.
"The orcs are pulling out of Lacolith," he said. "They're heading back north at full speed."
"Good," said Corland. "They're afraid of what we'll do."
The huge moves of the game were occurring once more. An entire army mobilizing to deal with two aircraft. At last, the Imperium had the initiative in the war, forcing the orcs into a reactive mode.
"We are in pursuit," said Thane.
"Good."
Corland relayed the news to Vulcan, then contacted Arua. He described the installation.
"Impressive," the tech priest Dominus said. "The possibilities it offers are considerable."
"Not for data collection," said Corland. "The only focus here is the pursuit of victory. I hope there is no chance for misunderstanding."
There was a slight pause. Then Arua said,
"None. I'm glad to hear it. Any contribution the Mechanicus can make would be welcome."
There was no pause this time. Corland thought Arua was speaking more quickly, the pace of his inflectionless words increasing with excitement.
"We are a long way from having mastered the gravitic technology of the Veridi Giganticus. Nonetheless, we know enough for me to hypothesize an intervention. It is the Primarch's purpose to break the Veridi control over the weapon?" "It is." "Then I urge you, Lord Commander, not to destroy the installation itself. We will attempt a field experiment." "Thank you, Dominus. I know you will reward our trust." "We will, Lord Commander."
The Nexus loomed closer, a hulk of dark metal, furnace blasts of flame and explosive energy. The Thunderhawks came in even lower, below the range of movement of many of the turrets. They angled away from the front of the Nexus, heading for the eastern edge of the installation, then turned north again, just before the cliffs. Vulcan looked at Corland.
"Fight well, son of Dorn," he said. "Your actions honor his name, and I will tell him so."
He stepped out of the door before Corland could ask him what he meant. The Primarch dropped into the night. A dark meteor of noble wrath. Vulcan hit the Earth 50 meters from the nearest conduit. He was in the darkness outside the installation, and the searchlights were all trained on the departing gunships. The rumble of industry and the bedrock groans it elicited from Caldera had covered the sound of his impact. He crouched in the small crater of his landing, motionless as a boulder, and waited. The conduits rose from the rock for 20 meters, then ran straight into the Nexus. Its near wall was half a kilometer away. He caught glimpses of the Orc forces mobilizing for its defense as they passed underneath the conduits. Their numbers were difficult to gauge from his position, but he knew they would be high, and the physical defenses of the Nexus would be considerable. The Orcs had devastated a continent to keep him from the rift. The most sensitive point in the canyon would be protected like nothing else in the system, except the attack moon itself. The Thunderhawks passed from his sight. The wait stretched. Vulcan was patient. He could wait centuries for the fated moment of action. On this night, though, he felt the impatience of anger. The moment of Caldera's salvation approached, but still the planet bled. Still, the monstrous act of engineering continued. But it ends tonight. Let that suffice for now. And it did. He must wait for the necessary turn of the war, and so he would. He found his way back to calm through his anger. He had much practice in this. Necessary calm was forged and tempered as surely as any weapon, and hardened into cold, unbreakable steel. Over the centuries, Vulcan had not been unaware of the currents at work in the Imperium. The divisions, the corruption, the Emperor's dream turning black with ash. Vulcan's disgust vied for preeminence with his grief. When Terra called for help, it was hard for him to hear his father's voice. He heard the cries of politicians, of petty connivers, and their toxic power games. "Father, don't you see what is happening? Why do you do nothing?" But the Orcs had returned to Alanor. That was grave beyond the comprehension of any Terran mortal. Then there was Corland. In his voice, Vulcan heard something better than the squalling of the High Lords. He did hear the echo of his father in Corland's absolute allegiance to preserving the work of the Emperor. The last Imperial fist had come to Caldera at the head of a force that united chapters of the Adeptus Astartes, the Mechanicus, and the Imperial Guard. There was a unity of purpose and commitment to that purpose, and Corland was capable of seeing that this purpose extended beyond immediate, rigidly defined goals. Vulcan declared that Caldera must be saved, and Corland agreed. He agreed because he understood why this was necessary. Vulcan saw something precious in the new chapter master. Emerging from destruction, he had forged something strong. Corland embodied a form of hope. So Vulcan waited, and he prepared for the final battle for Caldera and the greater war that waited beyond. The Thunderhawks dropped the squads of the last wall at the northern end of the installation, flew on, then turned back to provide air support, joined by Hemisphere in the death blow. Corland began the assault on the installation's defences. The wall was high and many metres thick. It was a patchwork of iron, plates and girders slapped together with speed, and so much excess that the barrier would have stopped almost any artillery barrage. The Askia Rift narrowed again here, and the ground rose steeply, choking off the canyon for several kilometres before opening up again. A large force would be caught in a bottleneck, movements hampered, working against itself. Against the squads of the Adeptus Astartes, the wall was worse than meaningless. It was a liability. They punched their way through its base with melter charges. The Thunderhawks and the Storm Eagle hammered its ramparts with assault cannons, tearing apart the first of the Orc defenders. The gunship strafed the wall repeatedly, holding the Greenskins' attention and preventing them from dealing with the threat below. In less than a minute, the Space Marines were inside the wall, out of reach of the enemy. The cannon fusillades continued, drawing the horde to that point, to the visible threat, away from the control nexus.
"Minimize the damage to the wall," Corland ordered the gunship pilots. "We want to keep it intact."
It had been built to keep attackers outside the facility. Now it would keep the Orcs inside. Two more melter bombs, and the tunnel was complete. Its sides glowed, still half molten, as the squads reached the downslope exit they had created. Before them, the Orcs were already massed in the thousands. The canyon was wider on this side of the wall, though still narrow enough to reduce the Orcs' advantage of numbers. The horde was deep and furious, a river of brute energy flowing between the towering conduits and sparking generators. The Orcs met the last wall with a hail of shells and fire. Corland and the front row crouched to give their brothers behind a clear field of fire. His squad sent focused streams of bolter fire into the foe. At the same time, a Loysian used his plasma cutter servo arm to begin a second tunnel that began at right angles to the first, then turned south again to create a second exit. Both squads hit the Orcs, turning foot soldiers to bloody pulp as fast as they ran up. The Orcs had small targets. The Space Marines had a tide of Xenos flesh before them. Every shot hit.
"No heavy vehicles," Eternity grunted.
He exchanged magazines so smoothly there was no interruption to the rhythm of his fire.
Not yet, said Corland. Hard to bring them forwards on this slope. They'll be waiting for us further down.
And for once, they'll be trying to move around structures they don't want to damage.
Exactly. Let them wait, or come to us.
The orcs closed in on the wall. The mass of infantry reached its base.
The Space Marines pulled back a few steps inside the tunnels. The orcs had no line of fire without exposing themselves.
They took the risk. The greenskins charged the breaches again and again, dying every time.
The war became a portrait of grinding immobility.
Blood flowed over the rocky ground, and bodies burned.
Deeper into the facility, engines roared with frustration.
Guns beyond Corland's sight launched shells to no effect. They could not come close enough for targets, and the orcs still believed they must preserve their wall.
Keep believing that, Corland thought,
until we're ready to destroy you with truth.
Vulcan waited. He was an unmoving shadow in the night, a stone among many. He read the flow of the green tide. He heard combat break out to the north. The howls of the orcs moved further and further in that direction. Vulcan waited. He was part of the landscape. There was no threat to the orcs here. They had no reason to linger. The danger came from Corland. The greenskins must protect their great machine from the enemy knocking on the wall.
Vulcan waited. Minutes passed. They turned into an hour. Combat raged, and he took no part. The better to prepare a terrible blow.
Vulcan waited. He thought about the main force of orcs in Lacolith. He visualized the brutalized landscape between the city and the Askia Rift. He pictured the news of the attack on the installation reaching the army. The response, the desperate drive back. He calculated the time of arrival. He listened to Corland's updates on the battle. Eventually, the orcs would decide to bring down their wall. He found the balance between the charge coming from the south and the siege in the north. He located the fulcrum of the war, the point upon which a hammer would shatter a blade with a single blow. Vulcan struck.